Irirangi Poho, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
40 years ago, the largest women's march in Aotearoa's history took place in 1983. But the march itself was aimed towards contributing to the anti-nuclear movement, and United Women across Auckland for the common cause. This week marks the launch of the Auckland Heritage Festival, and speaking at the festival is Kathleen Ryan, who organised the 1983 march. I spoke to Kathleen about her story and the relevance of her protest to the way we value our nuclear-free values today.
I was woken from sleep in the middle of the night at the end of March in 1983 by a woman who was involved in the Greenham Common Peace Camp and the movement by people in the UK to stop cruise missiles being deployed to the airbase, which the peace camp and the peace protests sought to surround to at least quite an extent. And that woman's peace camp was very active, had broad spectrum support, and was very involved with the anti-nuclear movement in the UK. And they called for a woman's international day of action. And this woman, who I didn't know, who had talked with a Kiwi woman who was at Greenham, called me to say, can you organise something in New Zealand for this day of action? So that's where it began for me. And about 2 weeks later, I went to hear Helen Caldicott speak at YMCA on Pitt Street. And there was clearly a groundswell of support for the movement because under Robert Muldoon, nuclear warships from the US came into New Zealand ports. And the US had a policy of neither confirming or denying whether nuclear weapons were on board. So the peace squadron would go out and protest on the water to try and prevent these warships, including submarines, coming into Auckland Harbour or elsewhere in New Zealand. And the peace movement started to grow, so that in the 70s, for example, you had the then Prime Minister, Norman Kirk, who had sent a frigate up to Mururoa with a minister on it to protest against French nuclear testing at Mururoa in the air. So the following year, the French decided that they would then test underground at Mururoa. So New Zealand and Australia had had some impact in terms of their campaign at the International Court of Justice. But then, as usual, nuclear weapon states find ways to do other things. So in the Pacific, you had the US testing at the Marshall Islands and the French, as I've said, at Mururoa. But we in New Zealand were also concerned, and there were calls for nuclear disarmament. CND had started in the UK in the 50s, in the 60s in New Zealand, and then you had Greenpeace in New Zealand from the 1970s. So there was actually, by that time, and after the Springbok tour, which had been quite divisive, in some ways, this was an issue that more people within the country could relate to. And Helen Caldicott, who I went to listen to, was a doctor and a member of International Physicians Against Nuclear Arms. And she was basically saying, well, what's the point of creating a world where we may actually compromise life on the planet with these weapons? And at the time, the nuclear clock was set at a couple of minutes to midnight. So things felt so dire for people. So this was a movement that increasingly was catching people's imaginations where people actually wanted to be able to act. And so this suggestion for action in New Zealand, I got up and towards the end I thought, flip, there's so many thousands of people in this hall, I've got to let them know of this meeting on the following Wednesday. And I'd put posters around the university and around a few cafes and places, but that was it really. And I expected 5 to 10 women to come. Well, I had over 30, and in fact possibly more. I can remember that I wrote an article for Broadsheet afterwards and I mentioned 120 at the first meeting. Now, I'm not sure if that was the first meeting of the group that formed out of the meeting at Just Desserts, which was then a small cafe in Auckland, or whether it was the first meeting of the coordinating group. But because I hadn't gone through the usual peace group channels, because though I supported protests, I had not been a member of any peace group. There were a lot of women who were like me, who decided they wanted to be involved. And that included both women in peace groups, women who then started peace groups in their local areas, and women who just wanted to take an action. And so we chose to have the march in the middle of the day so that women with children at home would be able to do it, and women at work would be able to come out at lunchtime in the lunch hour, and also so that women could get home after the kids came home from school, because this was a couple of days after the school holidays. So we were aiming to do the best that we could to make it an action where women could come if they wanted. And if they couldn't get to the march, we were willing to support them in other actions. So you had the Devonport Peace Camp, you had Waiheke Island, who had a whole day of activities on Waiheke Island, as well as I think some women coming to the Peace March. But it was just an incredible 6 weeks of weekly main coordinating group meetings and lots of subgroups doing their own things, but everybody working under this umbrella. But the umbrella was enabling. If women wanted to do other actions, then we wanted to support them. So it was part of a growing peace movement, and we had, at the time, in Auckland, we had at least a couple, Devonport and Mount Eden, councils that had declared themselves nuclear free. Because don't forget, this was before the last round of local government reforms, when there were far more councils in Auckland, and the last two rounds actually of local government reform. So there were far more councils around the country, and some were far more liberal than others. So there was a lot of peace groups, and this action really further invigorated and enlivened the peace movement and peace issues in the public consciousness. If women with young children could come out and protest, then it was a safe thing to do. So increasingly you had more families coming out, you had more people coming out, because there was so much concern about the future of the planet and the future of countries that were allies to some extent nuclear powered, but definitely countries which had nuclear weapons that they were transporting around the world when they visited other nations. So the Green and Common women were concerned about cruise missiles that would go into the UK airbase, and that could then be used across that particular region.
So just speaking a little bit about the march,
yeah,
it was aimed mainly towards the cause of nuclear disarmament, but it's also the largest women's march in our country's history and marked International Women's Day. What do you think the event shows us about how we can tackle multiple social change issues at once, and we can advocate for more than just one cause?
Well, I think the thing is that different women who were involved in that march had different views of war and peace. So, for example, and this is one of the things that as a coordinating group, because we had such a short time and we're so focused on coordinating rather than talking too much, we probably could have talked more within that group ourselves, because I think in some sense the range of women who came along to the march and the range of speakers on the day reflected those different views. So there were those women who were only for a nuclear-free New Zealand, and there were those women who, like for example PNAC, which was the Pacific People's Anti-Nuclear Action Committee, who stood for a nuclear-free and independent Pacific. And that was because of the fact that the Marshall Islands, which became a US protectorate after the Second World War, and French Polynesia, which was part of the French colonial state. So for women from the Pacific, including to quite an extent women, Maori women in New Zealand, they were looking at it from the lens of colonisation. Our lands have been taken from us, our power has been taken from us, and then we are subject to the negative impacts of nuclear atmospheric weapons testing. For example, Bikini Island. The term bikini got used for a woman's swimsuit, but actually that island, from memory, got split in two by atmospheric testing. I'm not completely sure on that. But also the people of French Polynesia suffered the fallout from French atmospheric testing, and over time the atoll at Mururoa became contaminated with the effects of testing, not only from the atmosphere but from the cracks in the atoll itself. So you can understand that there's going to be a range of different views. And in a sense, if you're wanting to achieve an outcome, you've got to be willing to work with and respect women and people across the spectrum who have a range of different views about the subject, but also to work with them. So there needs to be respect and also acknowledgement that different people are going to have different views, and that we need to be able to work together where we can and acknowledge where there are differences, where different people have different views. So in a sense, there was some tension within the way that we didn't think to set up the speakers on the day in terms of respectful listening to all while accepting that we may have a specific view. And I think that made things a little bit mixed for some involved in the organising as well as some people who attended.